And there you go, and that's the Beatles there and Paperback Writer. 087-69-44-500 is our text number if you would like to text into the programme. Now, speaking about writers, she wrote With Our Blessing, Beneath the Surface, Sleeping Beauties, The Confession, The Darkest Place, Dirty Little Secret, plus she's a co-writer in RTE's Taken Down. She's a mother and a wife and a housewife. I'm exhausted already. Joe Spain, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Did I get through the whole lot there, yeah?
Yeah, a lot of TV going on at the moment, but it's all in the ether.
It's all in the ether. Now, I've named off all your books there, and of course, with Dirty Little Secrets, it's the latest one that you have out. Any chance you could tell us a little bit about the book and, where do you get the ideas from for this book?
Yeah, well done, actually, in getting through the kind of library there. Well.
I have a good researcher by the name of Mabel.
She did very well. I like Mabel. I guess the latest one, actually, the kind of Germany idea came from. I'd heard a couple of stories about people being found dead in their houses and stories that were kind of told from a tragic perspective. You know, how could they have been left there so long? Where were their family? Where were their friends? And with the way my brain works, I was thinking, okay, what if they were left there so long very deliberately? You know, what if this person wasn't a very nice person or had done something? And then I just kind of decided to put it in this location where the fact that they were alone in that house for that length of time would actually draw attention. So I came up with this gated kind of exclusive community. There's seven houses here. And this woman has been, Olive Collins, has been lying dead in her house for 3 months. And the police turn up. One of the first things they're kind of looking at is that these other six houses are so, they're right beside her. There's no one else around. It's in Wicklow. It's a lot of money, very middle-class people, and yet they've been ignoring the fact that the blinds are down, the post is busting out, the letterbox, and now there's a stream of blue bottles coming out the chimney of this house, you know.
Right.
There's obviously somebody dead inside. So they start asking questions about the neighbours, and it just transpires as they go along that every one of the neighbours has had a negative interaction with the woman who was dead. So they all are glad that she's dead to varying degrees.
Right.
But nobody's perfect here. People have secrets, including the dead woman. And that's what we get through in the book.
That's what you get through in the book. Now, you've been promoting the book all around Ireland and the UK as well. Is that tired? And tell us a little bit about that. What's preparation for all that?
Yeah, it's actually exhausting. I mean, it's very enjoyable. Like, the writing life is, don't mind my voice, so I'm actually sick from all the travelling.
Oh, that's, sorry about that. And here I am annoying you.
It's a very solitary life writing. I mean, I'm at home 7 days a week, and a lot of those days, particularly when I'm in the middle of a draft, I just be in my tracksuit more. I get out and I have a walk just to get a bit of exercise, and I'm doing things with the kids, but I wouldn't see people, you know.
Yeah.
And then once or twice a year I'm sent on these promotional tours, and I have to kind of like shower and comb hair,
right,
you know, interact with civilization, you know. But it's good crack. You get to meet people who really, really love the books, and I guess I'm always surprised. Like, I know they sell because I hit the bestsellers list, but when I actually physically meet people who I'm not related to to buy these books, it's always a shock.
Say that again. I hit the bestsellers list.
I did hit the bestsellers.
Oh, great, great. Can I ask you this? Why crime and not maybe romantic novels or something like that?
I love to read crime books and I love to watch crime shows. For me, there's something very satisfying about the mystery, the start, the middle and the end, and getting that conclusion. And I like well-plotted books that don't necessarily have to be crime. You know, sometimes if there's a big event in a book, like I really like books like The Help or The Secret Life of Bees or even Eleanor Oliphant.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be a dead body. It just has to be a very well-constructed plot for me. But I think what I like about the crime especially is just trying to solve the mystery. Like when I'm writing the story for somebody, I'm writing it the way a reader writes for another reader because I love the genre. So I want to put those red herrings in and the clues and the little things along the way that I know as a reader I'd be very satisfied. You know, if I got to the end of that book and found out who the killer was, I was surprised.
Yeah.
That's how I like to write the stories.
Yeah, yeah. And so tell me this, when you're out driving or shopping or socialising or even down at the school gate, are you taking in what's going on around you and thinking, story there, or I could use that? Are you working all the time? Is the mind working overtime all the time?
Always. I was in the dentist yesterday and just getting a scale and polish, and she came across a bit of my gum is kind of tender at the moment, I think, from being run down, you know.
Right.
And I was saying to the husband, and so she's poking this gum. I rang him on the way back. She's poking this gum, and I swear to God, she was making it bleed. And I think she just liked the sight of blood. I think she was doing it on purpose. And Martin was like, oh, he's the crime writer, Joe.
Yeah. There's a story there. Yeah.
Very good. No, my brain is just, every time I see something, I only realised as years went on and I did more interviews like this that actually my brain does work different to other people's brains. Yeah. Because a lot of people can't imagine kind of doomsday scenarios or they worry about things, especially with their kids. But I think I always go the step beyond.
Mm-hmm.
I worry just beyond where other people would stop worrying, which is exhausting in a way, but fantastic for coming up with scenarios to write for books.
Because you have to be that way. You have to be tuned in all the time, because like your surroundings are your, what you call, your research, if you want to put it that way. Yeah.
Well, that's it. Like, and I've written, like, I'm on, just finished my 9th book, or I'm starting my, is it my 10th book? I think I'm starting my 9th book now.
Right.
In 4 years. And I've done 1.5 TV shows. I have another 2 TV shows due this year. So I constantly have this huge cast of characters in my head and a lot of story content to fill. So as well as the imagination, I have to take from the world around me, you know. I have to look at people in real life and absorb a lot of those characteristics, and that's what makes characters very authentic. Then people recognize something in them that they've seen in somebody else.
Speaking about characters, Tom Reynolds, all of your books except The Confession featured Tom Reynolds. He had a bit of a fallout with the boss, didn't he, Mr. Kennedy? Do you remember what that was all about?
Funnily enough, I'm writing Tom Reynolds 6 at the moment, and Mr. Kennedy is putting in another appearance.
Is he? Right.
But this is the thing with long-running series, and I know this from reading them. One of the important things to do is you see the character early on, and then you have to not be afraid to kind of let that character go for a couple of books and bring them back.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who buy into series, like I know, a lot of people have read The Confession and they're reading Dirty Little Secrets and they love them, but the people who read Tom are waiting for the next Tom to come, you know. They're really addicted to this detective.
Yeah.
And I'm like that myself. When I find a detective I really enjoy, you know, so they will sometimes say to me, such and such character, oh, when are we going to see him again, when are we going to see her again? But I have to be patient as a writer, and then the patience in the reader is, that pays off after a couple of books, you know. So that character came in, Kennedy, and he's kind of, he's weirdly bureaucratic. He takes over the chief superintendent job, and him and Tom fall out because Tom does not accept certain traditions, as you'd say, in the police force.
Yeah.
A little bit of misogyny towards women, and maybe kind of a routine or an accepted thing of you stick up for your own, even if the public are at risk, or if one of your own has done something wrong, it's police protect each other.
Yeah.
You know? And Tom does not like that. I mean, he's loyal to his team and he takes care of his team, but he's kind of mentoring them the tradition of, actually, we're public servants, it's our job to get the job done. So he clashes with Kennedy on this, and that goes into the darkest place where there are certain stories being leaked about Tom's involvement in investigations, you know. So he's not a pleasant guy, but he gets a comeuppance of sorts, and then we'll revisit him next year.
I think he didn't interview one of his one of the junior Gardaí or something like that, and I think the guard Cardi was coming in just for a chat, but it turned out to be an interview regarding the crime itself. Mrs. Reynolds, she wasn't very happy with him ringing up on Christmas Day anyway.
No.
Yeah, she said, you treat you like crap. And he's a schoolyard bully. Yeah.
This is the thing with his, Tom's wife, you know. She's kind of the truth there in his life, you know. She's very often just pointing out something factual to him. Because it is important, like, when you write a spouse for a detective who's as busy as these detectives in these series, because, like, let's face it, every time we meet them, they're solving a new murder, you know.
Right.
When you write their spouse in, they can kind of disappear off the page,
unless
you give them a very relevant personality trait. And with Louise and Tom, I mean, she shows how normal he is. He's a normal guy. Like, he's not one of these. And I've said that a few times. I didn't want to write an alcoholic or an insomniac or a womanizer. I wanted to write a nice man who we wanted to spend time with.
Yeah.
And his wife and his daughter kind of show those characteristics in him, because he is a very family man. He's a very friendly man and a loyal man. But their relationship works because Louise isn't afraid to turn around to him and say, fair enough now, you've been working 24 hours a day for the last 2 weeks. If you don't take me out for dinner now, we're getting divorced.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, right. I understand, yeah. Columbo used to bring his wife into it every now and then. When he'd scratch his head, my wife. Anyway, you're probably too young to remember them.
I remember Columbo very well.
Do
when
you?
I wrote The Confession, actually, everybody was saying to me, this is your Columbo novel, because we find out who it starts. And it's up to the detectives then to figure out the why at the end, you know. So it's in that kind of genre.
And just a matter of interest, what would you look at on TV as being a good crime, programme? I remember my favourite was The Bill. But do you watch anything like that and think of, I could use that or anything like that?
Yeah, I watched lots of those police procedurals over the years, like when they were on The Bill and Hill Street Blues and things like that. But we're in the golden age of crime drama on TV at the moment, between the, I think it all kicked off kind of the Scandies, The Killing and The Bridge and everything. But I'm obsessed with these kind of box sets and series. Like, I've just finished True Detective, and I didn't think this was the strongest series or two for that matter. But there's a lot of them. Like, as soon as they start, I'm obsessed with them. Like, last year I absolutely loved Mindhunter on Netflix. Trapped, The Night Of. I actually couldn't even think. Basically, if it's on TV and it's crime, I'm watching it.
You're
because
watching.
Now I write for TV as well, you know.
Yeah,
so
indeed. Yeah,
it's all research. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking about writing for TV, what have we got? Mark has texted in, and Mark is Donna Rahini there, and he wants to know about Taken Down. Are you going to be involved in the next series of that writing for that? And when is it coming out? God, he's asking
there,
a lot.
There's no plans at the moment. The story, when I did it, is kind of I know people struggle with this because everybody wants successive series of things, but the story was kind of self-contained in that it was as much about Benny and Direct Provision as it was about kind of the cops trying to solve the murder of Esme, you know.
Right.
So it was pretty much in the vein of The Night Of, which showed the brutalisation of that character through the New York police system, as much as it was a whodunit.
Yeah.
That's what the vision was for Taken Down, you know.
Right.
I am actually at the moment working on, I'm doing a Danish TV show, just about to start a Finnish TV show.
Yeah.
And I'm also adapting the Tom Reynolds, I mean, adapted next year for screen, and I've had an offer to start work on another one of the novels, which I'm not technically supposed to talk about, but I won't name it.
That's okay. That's all right. That's all right.
Taken Down, it might, we'll see. It might go on, but not for the moment anyway.
Yeah. Speaking about, as you say, Danish TV, your books, how many languages are they written in at the moment? Have you any idea?
Oh, there's, I think it's published in, I think it's 13 or 14 territories.
Yeah.
I get them all. Sometimes books just arrive, and it's like, oh, where is that?
Yeah,
Croatian.
I was listening to Sean O'Rourke there during the week, and he was talking to Sebastian Barry, and he was saying to him that he was his books have been written in languages that I don't even know the alphabets of. He said it's a weird thing. He says when you see your book and it's written in a foreign language, but however, here's a question for you. You're now you're well established. So what advice would you give to someone who would like to be where you are now but are only starting out, let's say?
I think, like, everything for me has happened very quickly, and it still feels like it's taken a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm only published since 2015, so it's kind of, and now I'm on TV and I've multiple territories and I've had a number one bestseller, and, you know, it seems like this kind of, like, speedy trajectory, but for me that felt like an awful long time. And I think one of the things that really gets readers, like when they get that publishing deal, is that actually, you know, they think this is the start of something wonderful, but it's the start of something. But for most people who write a novel, it takes a long time to kind of build to this kind of level, you know. And it takes a lot of patience, because very few authors hit those six-figure deals. Very few authors kind of get the New York Times bestsellers list in their lifetime, let alone over the period of a long number of years, you know. But I think the big thing is, if you want to write a novel, you write the novel.
Yeah.
And you do it for yourself. And if you're happy with the story you've written, then you've achieved something. Everything else after that is a cherry on the cake. You know,
right.
If you get published, if you get sold, if you sell, if you get into bestseller lists, they're all cherries on the cake. But anybody who wants to become a writer, I think it has to be a compulsion. Like, every single professional writer I speak to says the same thing. I would write whether I was published or not. Like, I have to write. And when I wrote that first novel, I had a full-time job. I had 4 kids. I didn't know I was going to be published.
Yeah.
But I still had to write the book.
Yeah.
You know, so if it's in you,
it was in you,
you will do it.
You had to get it out there.
Yeah.
Very good, very good. Have you ever heard of the Lifelines Book Club? Does that ring
a bell? I haven't.
You haven't? Okay, well, we won't go into that. I'll tell you about that another time if I come across you. But and of course, we should say, folks, that Joe's books, they're all available in libraries as well. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, and we love libraries, writers.
Yeah. Why do you
we
like?
We get paid every single time somebody borrows our books from the library.
Oh, that's very nice, isn't it?
Yeah, Ireland and England. I mean, like, obviously, people buying your books is fantastic, but interestingly, like, libraries are our best friends.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah.
I'd
never thought of that you know, when somebody goes in for... It's like, I suppose it's like here when and radio stations, when you play a CD, a track from somebody, like, they're getting paid. So if somebody comes in and hires a book, you're getting paid.
Well, that's it. They have it in Britain and Ireland now. And I mean, I grew up in libraries. My local library was Northside Library there, because, you know, I grew up in Coolock.
Yeah.
And I would literally, on the way home from school, I used to go in there and I read through all of the children's section. And I remember the adult librarian at the time saying, I can let you have an adult ticket, like, if you think you'd be able to read the books in here, and you can take out 6 at a time, you know, if you come in here. And for me, this was like manna from heaven. It was like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you know. I used to love the smell of the books.
Yeah.
And I slowly but surely make my way around the adult section of the library as well. And for me, they're just the most calm. And some people don't realise that they have that immunity on their doorstep.
Yes.
You know, like, you can just go in. Even if it's not about the reading, if it's just about being in the peace and the quiet. And my daughter's now starting to do her homework in the library near us, because they're just lovely places to be. They just smell nice, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you think the what would I say? You know, the way somebody can be into music and they say, oh, his mother or his father or his grandfather was into the music and it's handed down. That's where he gets it from. Where do you get your writing from? Where do you think?
It's an odd one. I know where I get the reading from, because every single one of my and you would know them well, Joe, was being distant relatives. So distant.
I didn't want to say that. Go ahead.
All of our I'm related to a family called Burns. Put it that way.
I know them.
Yes, you do. And they were all my nana, actually, who married a Smith. She was a voracious reader. And my first memories of reading are actually, she used to have a suitcase of kids' books under the bed from my aunties from the 60s and 70s, all the Enid Blytons. And that's like, for me now, she'd pull them out and I'd be reading through them. And she used to bring me around to a sweet shop around the corner, and he used to have the comics that he sent back to the publishers, and he'd let you buy them for 5p, all the Mandys and Bundys and Judys, you know.
Yeah.
And she read everything, and I read everything she read, and all of her daughters and sons all read as well. So it came from there. But I heard later on in life, I guess, when I started writing, that actually she used to write stories when she was younger as well.
Right.
And that there was a few people in the family
who did write
for various publications, you know. So there's obviously something, it wasn't something I was aware of.
Yeah.
It's obviously in the blood somewhere, you know.
Yeah, what did they say? You didn't lick it up off the street. Do you ever hear that saying?
You didn't lick it off the ground.
Is that what it is? See, you were paying more attention. That's very good. That's very good. Listen, we might even say hello to Greta and Stella if they're listening this morning. I think Stella's out in the allotment.
Greta is the most, I have to say, she's the most wonderful auntie on the face of the planet, and I'm not just saying that, she's babysitting the kids for me tonight.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, listen, it's great to talk to you. I'm going to let you go because, as you say, have you a busy day today?
Well, what my plan was today, I got up actually at 7:30 with the youngest, Dominic, and I've done 2,000 words already. And then I was doing this interview with you, and then I thought I'm going to an 80s fancy dress this evening.
An 80s?
So I've got to spend at least 4 hours now back home in my hair this afternoon.
Right. And yeah, are they flares, trousers or mini skirts or what? Or
I've gone for Madonna kind of mini skirts and lace and bows and dangles. And it, like, I'm just going to look hideous.
Right. And what's himself going as? Or is he going?
He says he's going as himself because he's just the Grinch when it comes to dressing up, you know.
He won't be punk rocker or anything like that.
I'm going to do my best. I might try and get him some kind of Miami Vice kind of
okay.
jacket with the sleeves folded up and a nice pink t-shirt underneath, you know.
Jeez, I'd say he'd look well at that.
Yes.
Okay, listen, Joe, thanks very much for taking a call this morning. Really appreciate it. And we wish you the best of luck in all and everything that you do.
Thanks so much for having me on, Joe.
You're very welcome. Take care of yourself there.
You too.
Bye-bye.